Welcome to our podcast. This is Friends on Fire.
I'm Mike. I'm a lifelong devotee of financial independence. I even wrote a book about it.
And I'm Maggie, a newer convert, but just as passionate, especially on the intersection of minimalism and financial independence. We're one and the
same. We are two like-minded friends who believe that talking about money with your friends and family opens the door to financial well-being.
The Friends on Fire podcast is about dispelling myths, building financial acumen, and sharing your financial independence journey with the people you care about.
This is Friends on Fire.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Maggie.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Jason.
How are you?
We're good. Welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me. It's a real treat to be here. And before we start, I must say to Maggie, congratulations on the early retirement. How exciting is that?
Oh, thank you. I owe it all to all the money I spent on all of my undergraduate and graduate education that got me here today, ironically. Okay. So we are really excited to have this conversation, Jason, for a number of reasons, right? One is selfishly, you know, across Mike and I's family, we've got five kids. I think I'll be the first one dealing with college. Mike will be a little bit further behind me, but I was like thinking about it, three to four years till I'm dealing with like college applications, probably 3 years actually, and about four and a half years till I'm paying for this. And so I am, selfishly, I want to talk about this and learn more. And the other reason is we haven't really done an episode on this topic before, right? We've talked about how to save money while in college. We had a summer intern over a year ago, and we did a couple episodes with her that she helped us put together around kind of targeted towards college students. But this discussion is really targeted towards parents probably that have, you know, are thinking about college now in the immediate future or, you know, many years out from now. So let me give you a quick intro so people know who you are. So Jason is from Miami, Florida, but now lives in the Atlanta area with his wife and two sons. He has a bachelor's in communication and a master's in professional writing. So he's, you know, got experience paying for college, multiple degrees. He's worked in various roles in public relations, media relations, marketing, writing, and editing. He is the author of a book called Margin Matters, How to Live on a Simple Budget and Crush Debt, and a second book, which is relevant to today's topic, called It Is Possible, How I Earned Two Debt-Free Degrees and How You Can Too. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. So welcome, Jason.
Thanks so much for having me. And I really appreciate that very kind introduction.
So Jason, we like to start all of our interviews asking about everybody's childhood and kind of digging into that a little bit. But we'd like to modify this one for you a little bit. How were you raised to think about college? So like who in your family went to college? What was the attitude when you were a child? What were your expectations? That sort of stuff.
That's such a good question, Mike. And it's going to be kind of an interesting answer. So I was actually raised, my mother, she never received more than a high school education. Now, my father actually does have a bachelor's and a master's degree. So he's the most educated person in my entire family until me. Now, when I went to college, I became the first person of my generation of my entire family. So like cousins, you know, to get a degree. So that was a big deal for me. So backing up a little bit. So I was raised, you know, we were pretty poor living in Miami. My mother was a stay-at-home mom. She didn't work when we were kids. My father worked. He was a workaholic, so I never really saw him. He was always working, you know, multiple jobs, all hours of the day. Now, I grew up, my mother, actually, I was thinking about this today. I don't know why. But when the day I turned 15 was basically the day that my parents said, okay, you're of legal age to work. You are basically on your own now. Of course, they let me still live with them, of course. But they basically say, whatever you want in life, you now can legally go work and get it. You want a car? Go get a job. You want to go to college? You got to pay for it. You got to figure out. You go work for it. You can work now. So that was kind of how my parents, dealt with me, I guess. They're like, you know, and sure enough, the day I turned 15, I started working at Kroger as a bagger. And I remember, I'm so old, minimum wage was $3.85 then. And I was only allowed, because child labor laws, I think I was only allowed to work, I want to say like 10 hours a week or 15 hours a week, something like that. So, you know, I couldn't really work that much until I really turned 16. And then I could really, you know, when I was 16, then I could, you know, work 40 hours a week legally. So that's kind of how my parents treated me. And, you know, I was, you know, became very resourceful because of that.
We have heard a lot of childhood finance stories, but I think this is the first one we've heard where somebody references child labor laws in their answer.
Yeah.
Working at a young age.
I like it when Jason, when you were talking about that, I also had my first job, my first W-2 job at 15, and it was at a grocery store, a smaller neighborhood one, Super Value. I remember those limits on hours, but what you think about it is kind of silly is like, there's a limit for 15-year-olds, but as soon as you're 16, they're like, whatever, go, you know, like the fact that you can work full time, you know, 1 year later is kind of funny that they put those limits. I don't even know if those limits are still around.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's a good question. But I will say, yeah, when the day I turned 16, then all of a sudden I'm working till 1 a.m. I'm working like graveyard shifts when I'm 16 years old. I'm like, and that's okay. You know, you think back on that. I'm like, that probably wasn't very safe, you know, for a 16-year-old to be working, you know, 1, 2 a.m, whatever. But, you know, that's how it was, I guess.
But it sounds like you learned some pretty strong work ethic at a young age and just general accountability for your own finances.
Yeah, I really did. And it was a lot of responsibility, you know, learning about money, learning how to manage money, how to handle money. You know, this is, you know, when you earn your own money, then you kind of think twice about how you're going to spend it. You know, it's easy to spend other people's money, like your parents, like, you know, my kids, I have a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old. And I always tell, you know, they always have their hand out. Hey, I want this. I want, you know, you buy it with your money. This actually happened yesterday. My son wanted to buy a toy or something at the store. And I said, well, you have $8 of your own. You can buy it yourself. He says, no, daddy, I don't want to buy it with my money. I want to buy it with your money. And I said, you know what that means? That means that you don't really actually want it.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, so we had that discussion. So, you know, we're teaching him some stuff.
That's a great way to say it. Cause there's a lot of things that if someone just said, hey, do you want me to hand you this thing? I'd be like, yeah, sure. Versus do I want to spend my own money on it? I'm much more discerning. So
think twice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good lesson for an 8-year-old to learn. Okay. So let's shift more towards the cost of college and getting into, you know, your personal college journey. But before we're doing that, or as we're doing that, I was looking up some stats about the average cost of college over time, because, you know, I've seen a lot of things over the years and articles, you know, particularly since having kids, about, you know, how much you need to save for college. And it's like hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, per child. And I remember what college cost for me. And I'm like, that seems like more than I ever spent on any college. And so here's just some kind of interesting stats. I'm gonna toggle between the average cost of undergrad tuition and fees, and then the average cost of, for a public school, and then for a private school. And this doesn't include living expenses and all of that, which can kind of double the cost.
That's exactly right. Situation. That's exactly right.
But so 1980, which is when I was born, the average cost of public was $1,856 a year. And the average cost of a private school was $10,227 a year. Sounds about right. In 2000, which is when I was in college, I started college in 98, but about 2000, average cost of undergrad tuition was $3,700 a year for a public school, $22,000 a year for a private school. And I remember those numbers. That is almost identical to what I paid at Georgia. I remember my tuition cost for in-state school. And then now, 2020, average cost for a public school, $9,400 a year, and average cost for a private school, $3,400 a year. I think it's increased even more so since then. Those are averages. Some schools are lower, some schools are higher.
$34,000.
Yeah. Oh, what did I say? What did I say? Oh, sorry. $34,000 a year.
Like, that'd be great.
I'd shift to private school right now. but when you look at that, just between 2000 and 2020, it's almost tripled in cost. Right. And so it's expensive. Right. And again, that's average. I know a lot of schools that are significantly higher than that. And like we said, living expenses can more than double that amount. I know people who say, you know, you should have $100,000 a year. And I'm like, my kids aren't going to have that sort of college education. which we'll talk about. But I just wanted to share that to kind of lay out the context of how expensive college can be. And then, Jason, I'd love to just, as we get into more about the cost of college and specifically how to save on the cost of college, I'd love to start with you just telling us a little bit more about your personal college journey, like where you went, what you studied, you know, and just a little bit more about that.
Sure. So I went to a school called Kennesaw State University, which is just north of Atlanta, Georgia, for those who aren't familiar with the area, about 25 miles north of the city of Atlanta. So I actually earned both my degrees there. And to give context, I'm a little bit older than you, Maggie. So I went to undergrad in the early to mid to late 90s. Yes, that's right. It took me about 6 years to get my undergrad. So I was in undergrad from 93 to 98. So back then, of course, it was much less expensive. But the thing about Kennesaw State was it was much more affordable option. And it still is when you compare it to maybe like a UGA or like a Georgia Tech or maybe even to Georgia State as well. So here's what I did. When I got my undergrad, Kennesaw State, they were a college actually at that time. They were actually a commuter school. They didn't have any on-campus dorms, no on-campus apartments at the time. So I was what they call a PC peer, parking lot, classroom, parking lot. That's what I did. So I lived at home. My parents let me live at home. I lived 7 miles from the campus. I just drove to class, drove home, lived at home during my undergrad years. So that was the first thing I did. The first thing, if you make one decision about college, if you stay in state and go to a public school, and just like you cited, Maggie, those differences between public versus private, the cost difference is astronomical, especially if you stay in state public. You will save tens of thousands of dollars just by making that one decision. So that was the first thing I did. And the second thing I did to save money and to be able to pay for it was the fact that I was able to live at home. And like you said, also a second ago, Maggie, the cost of living expenses usually is higher than the cost of tuition and books. So that's something that I don't think people realize until they actually kind of get it, you know, they do it and they're like, oh shoot, you know?
Yeah. Especially, I didn't even think about it, especially if you're comparing it to the in-state public, like you said, your living expenses are more likely going to be more, like you said, versus if you're, you know, paying for a really expensive private school, that's actually might be so high that perhaps your living expenses are, you know, the same. But
exactly
at that point, you're dealing with such large numbers anyways.
And so the next thing I did was, and this also was to my detriment of my GPA, was I actually worked 3 part-time jobs simultaneously while going through school. And they were convenient, though. I had actually had 2 on-campus jobs. I worked in the sports information office in the athletic department. And then I also worked as the sports editor for the student newspaper. So at the time, I was pursuing broadcast journalism and wanted to get into like sports broadcasting and stuff. So I was working 2 on-campus jobs. And then I actually had a retail job at Town Center Mall, which is basically right across the street from the campus. So I had a job, you know, at the mall, retail job there. So I was working, you know, making money, but also in addition to working, I also earned scholarships. So actually, a little bit later in college, I got a job at Chick-fil-A, and Chick-fil-A has a scholarship program. Now their program now is way more robust than it was back then. Back then I had to actually work there for 2 years and I received a $1,000 scholarship, which doesn't really seem like that much. But back then we were on the quarter system, which also shows you how old I am. And that $1,000 paid for 2 quarters. So it paid for almost an entire year of my school. So like 75% of 1 year was paid for by that one scholarship. Now, the other thing I did was I also was a volunteer student assistant in the athletic department. Now, you know, they didn't have a budget to pay me, so they were getting a lot of free labor out of me. So what happened was the athletic director got really creative to compensate me. So my junior year, he actually put me on a book scholarship. So my junior year, I had all my books paid for through an athletic book scholarship. Now my senior year, the athletic director actually gave me a full athletic scholarship, which when I reflect back on it, I realized I was the first non-athlete to ever receive an athletic scholarship in the history of the school. And I certainly hope I didn't take away a scholarship from an actual athlete, which I don't think I did. I think that was just their creative way of compensating me instead of like, here's a check for, you know, whatever, for your time. So they couldn't really do that, but that scholarship, that 1 year scholarship, that was that was huge for me. I mean, that saved me a lot of money because that covered tuition and books.
Jason, did you initiate and negotiate that, or did they come to you and just generously offer it?
No,
it just
that
fell
was,
in your lap.
That's
well, a you great, were volunteering.
That's so. A great question. And that was a complete and total shock. It's a complete surprise. Even the year before when I just got the book scholarship, I was like, wow, this is, because we know how much books are. Yeah. It's a huge racket. You know, you get, oh, I need this one book and it's $300 and you have to buy it new and it's a huge scam. But yeah, my senior year, I came back and the athletic director says, hey, we're going to put you on a full scholarship. I never asked for it. I never even would have thought to ask for it. I was like, you know, a young college kid, you know, 20 years old, you know, you're not going to, it's a little intimidating to go up to an athletic director. Hey, man, you need to pay me or you need to give me a scholarship. I never even thought about that. But that was life changing for me. And I wrote about that in my book and I thanked him in my book and he doesn't realize how much that changed my life.
Well, and you clearly, it's interesting. I was just curious if you had, you know, kind of initiated it or if it came to you, but even with it coming to you and you not asking for it, you were, I'm assuming, doing a good job in your volunteer position for them, or they never would have offered you that. Right. And so again, like a great life lesson, you know, when you do good things and work in areas that you're passionate about and do great work, you know, sometimes some pretty cool stuff can happen. So it's awesome.
It's so true. And I did pour a lot of hours into working there. So that's actually a good valuable lesson of like doing volunteer work. So you could just kind of look at it like that, like, hey, you know, volunteer work. Well, you know, I'm not going to do it because I'm not going to get paid. But look, you know, it could lead to something. It could lead to something that you would never expect. So that was good. And then the other thing I did to actually, I guess, allow myself to pay my way through was I kind of did what I call a pay as you go. So I actually went to college part-time a lot for a lot of the quarters or if you will, because that's all I could afford. I could only afford to maybe take one or two classes at a time. So that's one reason why it took me almost 6 years to graduate, because it kind of stretched out. Now I ended up going to summer school 3 years in a row, just taking, you know, one or two classes at a time. So I wouldn't be in there for a decade. So, but that's kind of what I did. That was my approach. I was like, hey, you know, I can't afford to go full-time this quarter. I'm just going to pay. I can do one or two classes. So that was my approach with that. And that's what allowed me to graduate debt-free with the bachelor's degree.
What made you decide to say, I'm not going to take on debt? Because a lot of people would say, well, I can't afford it either. I'm just going to take on a bunch of debt to do it. But like, what in your mind made you say, I'd rather do this slower and pay as I go versus get into debt over this?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I get that one a lot. And back then, you know, I was so young and naive. I was not aware of any student loan debt crisis or anything like that. Or it was just really goes back to Mike's question about my upbringing with my parents. And they never modeled debt. Now they never actually sat down and taught me stuff. I learned by watching them. I learned by their behavior, by how they handled money. I never saw my dad make any frivolous purchases. I never saw him drive a brand new car home just on a whim one night or come in, you know, one day, hey, we're all going to Hawaii next week. Like there was none of those things that ever happened in my childhood. My parents were very frugal and very, you know, wise with their money, and they modeled that to me. And so for me, you know, that debt wasn't even really like an option for me, because I was always taught if you can't afford it, you can't, you know, pay for it. You can't do it. So I wanted to go to college. So how can I afford it? How can I do it? What can I do? Well, I had to work three jobs. I had to earn those scholarships. I had to, you know, go part time. I had to get very creative and very resourceful to do it. So that was kind of my mindset.
So that's an interesting point. You didn't even consider debt to be an option. Now, I would say that people today consider debt to be the only option.
Right.
You're clearly very passionate about this, and you've written this book about it. Why do you think it's important that people understand how you can go to college without accumulating debt?
Right. It's such a good question, Mike. And see that, and to go back to what you first started saying. So here's the thing. Debt is the easy way out. Debt is the lazy way out. It's just too easy to get the, anyone that has a pulse can go sign up and get, you know, whatever loan amount of money that they want. And that's part of the big problem that's going on. And this goes back to Maggie's comment about why is college so expensive? Why have the prices gone up so much over the last decade or whatever? It's because of what's going on with the loan industry, with the student loans is the more money they give out, it's kind of like a snowball effect. You know, people get these loans, colleges raise the tuition, so people can get higher loans, then the college raises tuition anymore. So it's just it's a terrible trend that's happening. But
it's a little bit of supply and demand, right? Like
right.
The demand is still there when they increase the price. And so no one's getting penalized by increasing the price. They're increasing the price. They're, you know, making the cost higher. And like you said, people are willing to take out debt. And I absolutely just double click on what you said. Like it's so spot on what you said about, you know, debt is the easy way out.
It's the easy way. But the other thing is to give Mike some more insight is that this is the greatest lie on our this is one of the greatest lies on our society and culture today. The lie that says the only way you can go to college is with debt. That is a complete and total lie, because the facts say that over 600,000 students a year are graduating debt free. Guess what? You're not going to hear that in the media. You're not going to hear those stories in the media. You're only going to hear those crazy stories about people who have, you know, $800,000 of student loan debt. You know, those are the stories that you're going to hear about. But you can actually go to college debt free. And what I would say is, you know, it's a lot easier to avoid student loan debt than to hope and pray for forgiveness for the next 40 years of your life, that, you know, whatever administration is going to, you know, forgive your student loan debt. That's a terrible situation. Hope is not a strategy. It's a terrible situation to be in, because all that does is create anxiety and stress and depression. That people don't realize the long-term health effects of having, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt and, you know, hoping and praying that, you know, if I vote for this guy, he's going to help me out. And we, you know, not to get too political, but we know that that's not how it works. You know, politicians will say anything to get your vote. That's been proven over our lives. But another thing I'll say, Mike, is that what I tell people is, hey, what would you rather do? Would you rather take a gap year after high school and just work your butt off, or like maybe work two or three jobs and for a year, just take a gap year and just work and kill it for like a year and just save up a bunch of money and then go to college? Or would you rather go to college, take out debt, and then pay off debt for the next 20 to 40 years of your life? I mean, to me, I would rather work my butt off for 1 year than work my butt off for 20 plus years after college. So those are some of my viewpoints on that.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up student loan forgiveness, because I'll just make a brief comment on it. I have to be careful what I say on this, but because I don't want to offend anyone. Look, if I still had a bunch in student loans and they were forgiven, I'm not saying I wouldn't accept it and I wouldn't be thankful for it, which is my point. But it is a little frustrating as someone who worked their butt off to pay off all my student loans. And right. I did it quickly and aggressively. And like you said, you did a pay-as-you-go approach, Jason, and you're like, wait a minute. So just because we chose to be aggressive in paying off our debt and or to not even incur any debt like you did, you don't get the same leg up that somebody else might get, right? That chose right. to go to an expensive private school or, you know, something else. So again, I don't say that to say I would, you know, not accept it if it were handed to me also. I'd also be grateful for it. But I agree with you on like that shouldn't be your strategy. It should more be
right.
How do we avoid getting into that debt and be much more, you know, thoughtful about, you know, different ways that we can take on higher education?
Maggie, I think you just offended everybody who has student loans. So let me make a point. And Jason, yeah, I'm interested in your thoughts on this. I hope you'd agree. I think there are a number of very predatory type
right.
Behaviors right. about loans, about especially for-profit
right,
schools.
Right.
And so I think a lot of people that go through college and end up with a lot of debt, in some cases it's bad decision making on the, you know, from an 18-year-old. But in a lot of cases, they are right. the victims of kind of predatory right. behavior. And so I can see both sides of it. I'm not super thrilled paying for other people's debt with my taxes, but you know, I do think people need help sometimes.
And there's a lot of great, like when I started researching the crisis for my book, you know, I started out, it was all black and white, but now that I've, you know, researched it so much more, there's so much gray in it, like you were saying, yeah. Mike. And so that there's two different things. There's people that have been defrauded by like the ITT techs or the DeVry Institutes, yeah. or some of these colleges have already been shut down. So if you went to a for-profit school and you took out $100,000 in debt and you were, you know, promised that you're going to get this, you know, six-figure job if you get this, you know, prestigious degree, and all of a sudden you go to, you're two or three years in and you're $60,000 in debt and you show up for class and the school's closed and there's chains on the front door and all the lights are out and the signage is down and the school's gone out of business. Yeah, guess what? You've been defrauded. Those people deserve their money back. That's a totally different situation.
Yes.
And those people have been, and that has been happening. So that's a totally different situation than someone like, you know, that may have, like one of my classmates that went to Kennesaw State, and, you know, I'm sitting in grad school and the girl next to me, she tells me she's got $75,000 of student loan debt. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what are you doing to yourself? Like, why? Like, you know, what are you going to do? Like, you know, those are, you know, she made a conscious decision, right? And, you know, and the other problem, Mike, is that people now are making, because of this whole, you know, student loan debt forgiveness thing that's going through the media and the narrative and the rhetoric of that, is that people are making decisions. They're taking out, either they're taking out loans or they're taking out higher loans.
Well, they're not paying on their loans.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, they're not paying because they think they're going to get it forgiven. And that's a terrible, like you said, Mike, that's a terrible strategy. It's a terrible way to live. And I tell people, you know, all the time, like, you know, just pay your debt. You just pay what you can, you know, because you're setting yourself up for disappointment. Yeah. I hate to say it.
And you know, I can't like not say something, Mike, but when you were saying I might have offended everyone, I'm not sure if you were joking or serious, but let me clarify my point.
Okay.
Let me
joking.
Clarify my point just in case. I never want to offend anyone, but I will say what I think is frustrating about the situation is I'm all for student loan forgiveness for like teachers and people who, there's like programs where when you go and teach in lower income areas and you give back in different parts of the community.
Public servants.
Yeah. Public servants. Great example. Love those programs. I'm, you know, highly supportive of it. Love my tax dollars going against it. What I think is frustrating at times is that I know what I did to pay. I mean, I had, you know, I don't know if I include grad school also, I paid them off very quickly and aggressively, but I had, I don't know, $80,000, $90,000 in student loans between, you know, a little bit of undergrad and mostly grad school. But I lived below my means. I lived very frugally. I worked very hard to pay those off. And yes, I have a lot of privilege and, you know, was able to, but if you take someone in a very similar socioeconomic situation to me, which is all I'm comparing myself to, and they were living large on their high paying job, like I had, and not paying paying the minimums on their loans and incurring more interest and everything else. And then they get student loan forgiveness. You're like, wait a minute. Like because I paid mine off fast and early, I'm not going to benefit from that program, right? That's what's frustrating about, you know, something like that. But yeah, I'm not going to harp on that point. True.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
I'm not going to harp on that point. We'll get back into I can't even remember what we were talking about.
But I just real quick, I want to let you guys and the audience know that I've lived on both sides of this crisis. Actually, when I got married, my wife had $60,000 of student loan debt. She also went to Kennesaw State and got an education degree. And so she had $60,000 of student loan debt and she paid that off. In 2 years, the first 2 years of our marriage, we aggressively paid that off, making a combined income of $60,000. Each of us had $30,000 a year jobs at the time. So we were very, very aggressive in paying that off. So I do have a kind of a unique perspective. Yeah. I've been blessed to have the two debt-free degrees, but I also had, you know, my wife had $60,000 of student loan debt. So I've been on both sides of it.
Yeah. And I love that just you sharing those specific numbers even because it shows that you can pay off debt. Again, I think the purpose of this is we'd like to figure out how we can take on less debt for college in general.
Exactly.
But if and when you have it, there are ways which everything we cover in all of our podcasts will help you on your journey to pay off whatever debt you have aggressively. Okay, so let's get tactical on what people really can do here. I would love for you to help us dig into some specifics on how people... just different tactics for how people can not get into debt and enjoy a college education or a
higher education.
Thank you. Or a higher education. I have a higher education and I can't even come up with words like that.
That's okay. Now there's a lot of real quick. I'll show you guys how I got my master's degree, and that's a shorter story. So I was working at the university, and this will be good to everybody here because anybody can do this. So I got a job at Kennesaw State, and guess what? They have a tuition assistance program. So if you're an employee, they will pay for all your tuition. So I just had to pay for my books. Well, guess what? I had that paid for, but guess what? I still applied for scholarships and I got scholarship money. I actually earned $1,500 in scholarship money, pay for my books. And then what happened was I actually changed jobs before I graduated with my master's. I got a job in the private sector, and thankfully, my job, this is the job that I have now, they have tuition reimbursement program. So that was the first thing I did. My first day on the job, I signed up for that immediately, and they reimbursed me for the rest of my schooling. So that's how I was able to do the master's degree. And so you're going to see, this is a big trend now, and this is an exciting trend that's going on, is that companies are offering tuition reimbursement. So if you're maybe looking for a job or looking to change jobs, that should be the first thing that you look, go to the HR page on their website, look at their benefits, see if they offer tuition reimbursement or any type of tuition assistance. It might be different names. There's different names for it, but this is a big trend. I know, Target was just in the news recently. They're going to pay for all their employees' school. You hear all the big name companies, they get all the headlines, Publix and Costco. I know Starbucks, the big brands, they're the ones that get the headlines, but a lot of companies are doing this now because they see the value in investing in their employees, because it helps both. It helps the employee, and it helps the employer to have a more educated or more well-rounded a person. So that's a big trend now that you can look for.
Jason, I love your point about different companies having tuition reimbursement programs, particularly for grad school, because often some of the companies that are more focused on that tend to be the type of job where you already need an undergraduate degree to get that job in the first place, but not always. But I, just a quick story. When I was at Emory getting my MBA, my full cost of that MBA experience was about 90 grand, maybe a little bit more. And I was sitting in class with about half the students in my class that worked for companies that had a full ride. And I remember being painful to hear that and being like, wow. I worked at Home Depot at the time, and I think they reimbursed about $2,000 a year was the max. And I was like, well, I appreciate it. But it was like a dent in my, I'd crammed my MBA into 2 years. So I had about $4,000 was going to be reimbursed against my $90,000. So it was something, but it wasn't 100% full ride. And I remember one of the companies, I'll give them a shout out. A bunch of people in my class worked for McMaster Car, which I had never heard of before. And, it's just in the grand scheme of companies, right? It's a smaller company, but they paid for 100%, no max on what that MBA cost was, right? So they were paying this 100 grand tuition. And it only required you to stay with the company for a few years afterwards. And it's an amazing, amazing deal when you're looking at kind of postgraduate degrees.
That's real good. That's a good story. And a couple other ones I'll share is you can get jobs on campus that will give you tuition waiver. So this is actually bigger on the graduate level. They call them GAs, graduate assistants. Now there are some at the undergraduate level too, but these are easy jobs. These are like 19 hour, like these are part-time jobs that you're going to work, on campus. That's going to be related to your degree program. So you're getting relevant experience. It's not a big time commitment. It's usually like a 19, 20 hour a week job. But they give you, they call them a stipend. So it might be anywhere between, $2,000 and $5,000 a semester. It's like a one-time stipend. Now that's not a lot of money when you spread it out, but you're getting that tuition waiver. So that's a big thing. Now, the other thing I want to tell you guys that I'm so excited to always share, are you guys familiar with the dual enrollment program? Have you heard of this? Yes, Maggie's perking up.
I am, yeah. My brother did it. And I know a ton of like neighbors who do it now pretty aggressively. And
yeah, this yeah, but thing.
Tell us more about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I have actually a funny story about this. So I'm sitting in grad school. I'm 40 years old and I'm in a creative writing class. And first day of class, here comes this kid. He sits down next to me. He's 17 years old. And I start talking to him. I'm like, how are you here? And he says, oh, you know, I go to, I forget what high school. He goes, I go to the local high school here. I'm in a dual enrollment program. I go, what are you talking about, man? So he starts telling me about this dual enrollment program. And I'm furiously writing down notes because I have a 2-year-old at the time and I'm trying to figure out how to sign him up. He says, yeah, how it works is, you know, I go to school. I think the way he did it was he graduated a semester early of high school. So I guess he kind of planned ahead a little bit, graduated a semester. Then he started going to, I guess, night, you know, taking classes at Kennesaw State, you know. And you know, night classes are more convenient, I guess, if you're still in high school during the day. Maybe gets early leave, you can do it that way too. But basically what he was going to do in the fall, that fall, he was going to go to the University of Alabama and study engineering, I believe it was. But he's going to start as a sophomore. So he's had his whole first, he gets the time and the financial barrier removed. So he's going to start as a sophomore and he's going to have his whole first year of college paid for by the state. And that's everything. That's books, tuition, everything. Mm-hmm. So I said, how does this, you know, how do you qualify for this? Do you have to have like a 4.0 GPA? Do you have to have like this, you know, perfect attendance, you know, perfect student status? He says, no. You just, you know, you don't have to have any of those. You just sign up for it and you just kind of plan ahead, you know, plan your schedule ahead so you can do it. I said, this is unbelievable. Like, why isn't everybody talking about this? This is like the lottery here. So that is something that I definitely want to share with all the parents of the high schoolers out there. Look into that. Look into that dual enrollment program.
And just to clarify, you're paying the, I don't remember if it was a reduced rate, but I mean, you're paying for, often it's like a local community college that you're doing it at. So you're paying in-state, you know, quote, in-state tuition. You're kind of paying as you go. There's no living expenses because your high schooler still lives with you. And it's really cool. And I know people who also have done the same thing where they get so many credits in their, like, I think sometimes junior year too, but senior year, that they have skipped an entire year of college credits. But I also know people who just take a couple classes and they may get, you know, a quarter or a half a year off of their college expenses, which still, when we're talking about, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a year just for tuition can save, you know, a lot of money, and can supercharge you from taking some of those kind of basic colleges or basic classes in college also.
Yeah, that's so true. Now, another thing, Maggie, that a lot of people, you know, I interviewed a lot of people for my book, and what's interesting is that all the people that have the student loan debt, they express regret and remorse. And it's very interesting. It's a common thread in these conversations that I had with people. And almost every one of these interviews or conversations that I had with them, they always say, you know what, Jason, if I just would have gone to community college first, I would have cut my debt in half. And I said, oh, really? You know, so community college, you know, usually it's a, you know, you can get a 2-year associate degree. And what people don't realize is, well, first of all, it's much less expensive, first of all, to go to a community college, but also, you know, you might only need an associate degree. An associate degree can lead to a lot of really good paying jobs that people might not realize. So that might be all the schooling that you might need for what you want to do or what you're interested in. So of course, if you want to go on to your, you know, your big name school, your dream school, you can do that too, but you're saving half the cost or even more maybe by going to a community college first. So that's another idea.
Yeah, that's interesting. So what if people don't want to do the community college path, right? What if you're like, I'm going to my local, you know, in Atlanta, UGA is a really popular school. Right. So it's Georgia Tech, et cetera. What if they're like, I'm going to that school. How do I get the cost of that down?
Well, the first way is, like I said before, you see if you can get in-state status. That'll save you. If you're in-state, that'll save you a lot of money. The other thing is some of the things that I regret was when I was in high school, I had no relationship. I don't think I ever walked into my high school guidance counselor's office. So that'd be one thing I would say. If you're still in high school or you still have students in high school, connect with your high school guidance counselor, see if they can help you with scholarship applications. There's so many scholarship applications and grant applications out there now. And then once you get into college, these are things that I didn't know about, you know, when I was doing this. And you know, so there's a scholarship office. So if you go to UGA and that's your dream school and you decide, okay, I'm going to go to UGA, the first day you're on campus, you should go find that scholarship office and become best friends with the scholarship advisors or the scholarship counselors, because they're there. Their only job is to help you get scholarships. So go in there, set up a meeting with them. And guess what? People don't realize you can apply for scholarships when you were a junior in college, freshman, sophomore, junior year. You know, if you didn't get that Hope scholarship or whatever going into your freshman year, don't give up. Keep applying for scholarships. A lot of times it's a numbers game, keep applying and develop those relationships with those scholarship officers. They're there to help you. And that's one thing that I regret. I never did any of that.
You know, one of the interesting things about scholarships that maybe people aren't aware is that, like, they always have to go to somebody. They are usually endowed or funded by some company or some individual. And it's not like, you know, if somebody doesn't discover them, the money's saved and, you know, going to something else. So, like, the money is there to be had. And if you are the only person that applies for it, you're going to get it, you know? So I, Jason, I love your advice of kind of getting in at the source and finding out all of the options, because if you do that, I think people would be surprised by how many opportunities there are
available. And you always hear that famous stat, and I know Dave Ramsey, people like that quote this, is that there's hundreds of millions of dollars of scholarship money that goes unused every year. And I actually interviewed another lady and I ran that quote by her. She says, actually, Jason, it's much more than that. And I'm like, it is? Wow. So there's a lot of money that goes unused, and there's a lot of reasons why that is. And one of the reasons is people might be afraid to apply for scholarships because they might be afraid that it's just too competitive. Like, yeah. There's no way I'm going to get a chance to do it. Or the other reason, like those little scholarships that I got a $500 scholarship and a $1,000 scholarship. People might see those and be like, I don't want to waste my time for a $500 scholarship. I'll go for this $50,000 one. That's the money I need. But guess what? There's a lot more competition for that $50,000 one than those $500 and those $1,000 and $2,500. Mike, to your point, I guarantee I probably got that $1,000 scholarship because I was the only one that applied for it. I'm pretty sure that was the case. Now the other one, the $500 one, that was one that they kind of split up. I think they gave out like 12 of those. So I was like one of 12, you know, winners of that one. But that's another thing that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, what if you got 10, you know, $2,500 scholarships, you know, it all adds up.
Yeah. So you mentioned a few resources in your book that I'd love for you to talk about, but if I'm saying, okay, cool, I want to go down the grant and scholarship path, where do I begin? Can you share some recommended websites where people can search for those?
Just go to Google and put in, you know, scholarships and, you know, how do I find scholarships in Georgia, or maybe for the specific school you're looking for. There's actually really good resource books too that are available to help you find scholarships. There's one that's kind of like the size of a phone book that you know, you can find those on Amazon, anywhere that sells books. But really just go into just Google. And there's so many scholarship websites that you can go onto and just, you know, create an account. And but you do have to be careful, because a lot of these, there's some scammy stuff out there that are going to want you to, you know, pay like to create an account. So just just be wary of stuff like that. There is some nefarious stuff with the scholarship website. But make sure you're just don't pay to apply for a scholarship.
I was going to say, that's probably the good tip of where it's a scam is you shouldn't have to pay to find scholarships or to apply for them.
That's when you abort, when someone says $100 application fee to no.
Yeah, something's don't do not that. Right. So you mentioned HOPE. We all live in the state of Georgia. The HOPE scholarship is what paid for me to go to school. And it's why I decided to stay in state, actually, because when I was in school, you had to have a B average or higher, and it was fully funded at any in-state tuition school. And an amazing thing. I think I saved, I don't know, $20,000-$30,000 in loans through having that. And I just had to, you know, focus on my books and living expenses and things like that. And I'm just curious on that one. There's now a different name there's HOPE and Zell Miller scholarships in Georgia. And I was just Googling because I was thinking, like, how many other states have programs like that? And what I did find out was there are 8 states that specifically use the state lottery to fund programs, which is how Georgia's is funded by the state lottery.
Right, right.
And it's Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, New Mexico, South Carolina, West Virginia, and Tennessee. But if you're not in those states, well, first off, if you are in those states, look into that, because that's a massive benefit for you, an additional benefit for you to stay in state. But if you're not, are you aware of other programs that are kind of state funded like that, that are not your kind of, you know, these one-off little scholarships that you can piece together?
That's funded by the lottery, you mean?
No, that's just funded by the state in general.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I'm not I'm not familiar with any that are specifically funded by the state. But that one, those ones that you're talking about, the Hope Scholarship, that is such a good scholarship program for those that I think you still have to have just maintain a 3.0 GPA. And I know a lot of people that qualified for that. And then I guess they lost it. And that's one of their biggest regrets, because I guess once you lose it, you can reclaim it, but it's very difficult. You got to get that GPA back up. You got to maintain a 3.0. But that one is a very good scholarship program if you can get that. But yeah, that's a good question, Maggie. I don't know any off the top of my head, but I'm sure that, you know, depending on what state you're in, that should be something that you could easily, I guess, research online to see what other similar type programs would be out there that could offer assistance.
Well, and perhaps, you know, we use Georgia as an example because, you know, that's what the three of us are certainly more familiar with, of just the idea that it is because of things like the Hope and Zell. I was going to say Zellner. What's it called? Zell Miller. Scholarships. It's very affordable if you live in Georgia to stay in state. And there's a lot of great schools of all different types, depending on what you're interested in and what your, you know, capability level is and everything else, and what sort of social experience you're looking for and everything else. There's something. And I think there's a lot of people that just, for lack of a good reason, or, you know, just because they're want to and it seems exciting in the short term and you're young and you make these decisions, just decide to go somewhere else because, again, it sounds like a cool location or, you know, whatever. But it seems like there's just so much. I know you've mentioned this a few times, that you can save by staying in state.
Yeah, there really is. That's really, if you make one decision, if you make the decision to stay in state and go to a public school, that's going to save you tens of thousands of dollars, just that one decision. So that's what I try to stress to everybody. And I know you were asking about the scholarship websites a second ago, so I did just think of a few, so I'll throw out there. Of course, there's scholarships.com. That's a big one that's very popular. There's one called fastweb.com, and there's College Board. That's collegeboard.org. That's a very, very good website as well. But there's a whole bunch of them. But I just want to mention those three. I just thought of those. I know you had asked me about that a second ago. But there's so many opportunities out there. The point is there's so much money out there that goes unclaimed, and there's so many opportunities out there. So really, it's knowing where to look, knowing who to ask, knowing who to connect with, connect with the right people that will help you, you know, unearth some of this money to help you lower the cost of college.
So Jason, you've mentioned so many different things that you can do to get in with the school or an employer, to find scholarships, to find ways to have your costs covered. People are probably listening to this and thinking like, oh my God, when did this become so damn complicated? And is this even a sustainable model? I'm overwhelmed. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on the future of higher education, and what are some alternatives?
That is the best question of the night, Mike, because that is actually the biggest chapter in my book, the chapter titled Alternatives to Traditional College. So we've kind of reached a precipice, I guess, where, you know, traditional college isn't for everybody, and that's okay. And we live in such a great digital technology-based society now that there's so many ways to get higher education at a much affordable rate. Now, I've got a list here. I can go over a few things. Obviously there's we talked about community college a second ago. There's online college. Now, let me real quick, online college. Now, first of all, not everybody is wired to learn online, but you can save a tremendous amount of money by going to online school, because guess what? You're not paying all those additional fees, you know, student fees, athletic fees, you know, parking fees, all those extra fees in the tuition. You're just paying for the cost of the course. So if you go to online school, it's so much cheaper. So that's an idea. Now, this is the one that I really love telling people, like, it has several different names: technical school, trade school, also known as vocational school. Now, here in Georgia, we have like the Technical Colleges of Georgia, which is really big. Now, if you know what you're interested in, or if there's a trade, or if there's a skill set that you want to learn, if you want to become, you know, a chef, you can go to like a culinary apprenticeships program, and you can go to these programs at a fraction of the cost and a fraction of the time as, you know, going into you know, the average student, like myself, the average student does not go through traditional college in 4 years. It usually takes 5 to 6 years to graduate. So guess what that means? That means you're paying more money. You're going into more debt. So what if you could go to a technical school and learn a valuable skill set in 2 years for, you know, $10,000 to $20,000, say? Would that be, you know, a wise choice? You know, I know a lot of kids that go into college, they don't know what they want to do yet. So that's a big problem. You know, hey, you know, I'm 46 years old. I still don't know what I want to do yet. You know, so there's that's a really good, you know, research the technical trade school options. There's a lot of good things there. Now, another thing, you know, hey, the military is not for everybody, but you know, I know a lot of people that specifically go into the military because they have amazing educational benefits. They have the GI Bill, they have the VA education benefits, and some of those actually will pay for your entire family. They will pay for your spouse, they will pay for your kids to go to school. So like I said, I know people that have gone to the military just for those education benefits. So that's something to think about as well. And then, you know, I talked about apprenticeship programs. It might be something that's kind of off the radar for a lot of people, but there's a lot of really good apprenticeship programs out there. You know, my sister, I interviewed her for the book as well. She started working at a hair salon, just working at the front desk, you know, answering phones, you know, working part time. And then the salon owner, he came up to her and said, "Hey, are you interested in doing an apprenticeship program with me?" She says, "Well, what are you talking about?" He says, "Well, it's a 2-year program. You shadow me. You'll learn about the business. You'll learn about, you know, how to become a professional, you know, stylist, you know, makeup artist." And she said, "Oh, well, you know, that sounds pretty interesting. I'll do that." And so she did that for 2 years. She got all her training through him. And then she went to, I think in Georgia, you have to get some sort of certification or take a test and get, you know, professionally certified. She did all that. And now she's, you know, several years later here, she's still doing it. She's a professional hairstylist and makeup artist. So there's lots of opportunities like that that are not found, you know, in the traditional college route, that you can still land very rewarding careers and job opportunities without, you know, the 4 to 6 year, you know, $80,000 to $100,000, you know, traditional college experience.
Yeah, Jason, I absolutely love those examples, and I'll layer on and kind of double click on a couple of those. When I spoke at Camp Fi a couple months ago, I met Tinian, who is the blogger behind DIY2Fi.com, the website. I'll put a link in the show notes. He's such a nice guy, such a cool guy, and he is an electrician. He gave a really cool talk, but he just, you know, I think about like electricians and plumbers and just what I just know what I pay them when I have issues mm-hmm. at my own house or my rental properties. And I know their hourly rates, and they're doing quite well compared to people with, you know, multiple master's degrees and other situations. And so, and you have a lot more flexibility. You can, you know, flex your hours. You can often have a more kind of entrepreneurial lifestyle in how and when you work. And so I love those examples because I think you're right in that, you know, I think, depending on kind of how you were raised and how you grew up, some people think that, you know, college is their only path or their expected path, or they're never going to get a job or make anything of their lives without it. And there are so many different paths where you can be, you know, incredibly successful and happy. And even the military one, another example on that one is, you can also be in the reserves and get mm-hmm. a good bit of tuition reimbursement through that, up to 100% sometimes. And so there's a lot of different paths that can look different. And I love the thought of thinking more creatively about what's right for you. And just you talked about this at the very beginning, so I'll kind of circle it back around as we wrap this up. But the idea of the mindset that you don't need to go into debt to pay for college. And look, I'm not saying you might not go into some debt, right? But I think people too willingly, as you said a few times, just think, it's easy, it's assumed, they'll loan me lots of money. I'm not even going to question this. And they don't really think about the long-term repercussions, the parents or the kids, right? And there's two levels of responsibility, in my opinion, there. And we have to teach our kids, because a 17-year-old or an 18-year-old is not necessarily informed enough to make the best decision on some of these topics. So we really appreciate you coming on, Jason. I want to ask you one final question. Is there anything else that you want to share with us that we haven't talked about yet or that you're really excited or passionate to share today?
Yeah, as we wrap up, you know, the main thing, like Mike was asking, you know, what is, you know, our society and culture is changing. Is traditional college really still for everybody? Is it still necessary? Is it still, you know, mandatory to get a good job? And so I want to drop some what I call shocking statistics that will really kind of help you pause and think about, you know, maybe there are alternatives that I could do to still receive higher education and valuable job training skills. So here's a couple of them. So 40% of all college attendees drop out before earning their degree. So guess what? That's the highest. USA has the highest dropout rate of any developed country in the world, which is absolutely astonishing to me. So those are the ones that are getting into trouble. The people that take on the debt and they don't even finish the degree. Those are the ones that are suffering the most. 40%, which is amazing. Now, here's another thing. Did you guys know 40% of all high school graduates never even go to college? What are they doing? Where are the media stories about that? They're doing something. They're being successful in life. They're going into the work field, whatever. So that's interesting. Now, here's another one. Only 27% of college graduates actually work in the field of their major, of their degree. So that there's that to consider. So, you know, how important is this? You know,
yeah, I believe
yeah,
that one.
That's one right there. Yeah. And then here's the last one I'll drop on you guys. 41% of recent college graduates work in jobs that do not require a degree. So that's what's been going on. So these are things that you kind of need to kind of just rest on. And like when you're sitting back thinking, you know, what is the value of this degree? Like you really have to do your ROI. You really have to do your research in the job, you know, go hire a career coach to work with you. And, you know, is this degree going to match up with, you know, the salary level that I'm, you know, aspiring or whatever, the career progression that I want. So that's what I want to end you guys with. Just do your research. Make sure you do your due diligence and you know, make the wise choices.
I love it.
Awesome. Well, this was super fascinating and I think very helpful for people who are about to send their kids off to college. And certainly for ones like me and Maggie, who, you know, we're 5 to 10 years away from it, but it's good to start planning this stuff.
Yeah, right, honestly, now. This is making me feel a lot better about, I have my own views on, you know, what I plan on paying for college and you know, the approach I'll financially support. But we've still, you know, we've saved a good bit for our kids, way more than I had ever had. But this conversation actually makes me feel more confident about the money I have saved because it reminds me that, you know, I don't have to pay $100,000 a year for my kids to go to a good school and get a good college education if that's what they choose to do in the path that they want to go down.
Right.
I am going to ask you one bonus question.
Okay.
If we gave you a billboard and we'll put it outside a big university so you get good placement on it, what message would you put on that billboard that you want to share with the world?
Well, the message is the title of my book. It is possible. You can actually get a degree or higher education in any form that is appropriate for you, debt-free. You can actually do it. There are ways to do it. There's a lot of resources out there to help you do it. So that's the message. It is possible. You can do it.
I love it.
All right. Well, on that note, Jason, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a real pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. I hope you guys learned something. I hope the audience learned something and I appreciate the conversation.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jason. Bye, Mike.
Thanks.
Bye, Jason.
Bye. If you've been challenged or inspired by what you've heard, please rate and review the show. You can also subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode. If you have any thoughts or questions, we'd love to hear from you. And feel free to send Maggie some more questions about how retirement's going. We will answer them, definitely. You can leave us a voicemail or text us at 404-981-3370 or hit us up on Instagram.